Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Smartest Guys in the Room by Bethany McLean examines how Enron went from a celebrated innovator to one of the most infamous corporate collapses in modern history. Built on the author's reporting and publicly available records, the book follows Enron's transformation from a conventional energy company into a self-styled trading powerhouse that promised to reinvent markets. It also traces how that story unraveled under the weight of aggressive accounting, conflicted incentives, and a leadership culture that prized image and deal-making over durable value. Rather than treating the scandal as a single bad act, the narrative shows a system of choices, complex financial structures, opaque disclosures, and internal competition that rewarded short-term performance and punished doubt. At the same time, it highlights the ecosystem that enabled the rise, including analysts, banks, auditors, and media enthusiasm. The result is a cautionary portrait of ambition, rationalization, and institutional failure with lessons far beyond Enron. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, building a legend, how Enron sold the story of limitless innovation. A central theme is the way Enron constructed a persuasive corporate myth. The company presented itself not merely as an energy business, but as a revolutionary platform that could trade and price almost anything, turning volatility into profit. The book explores how leadership used bold visions, polished messaging, and constant deal announcements to keep attention fixed on growth narratives rather than on fundamentals. That narrative was reinforced internally through a culture that celebrated intellectual confidence and treated skepticism as a lack of ambition. Externally, the legend benefited from a market environment that rewarded visionary language, especially when new economy thinking made intangible value feel more legitimate. This topic shows that the rise was not powered solely by financial engineering, but also by storytelling and reputation management. The image of being the smartest people in the room made it easier for complex strategies to go unquestioned, because complexity was framed as proof of sophistication. The book also illustrates how success created a feedback loop. Rising stock prices validated the story, which then justified riskier promises. Readers see how a company can become addicted to its own narrative and how difficult it becomes for insiders and outsiders to separate performance from presentation. Secondly, accounting as a strategy, mark-to-market profits and hidden obligations. The book details how Enron's financial reporting approach helped manufacture the appearance of steady earnings. A key mechanism was the embrace of mark-to-market accounting for long-term contracts, which allowed the company to book projected future profits immediately. In theory, this method can reflect economic reality when assumptions are disciplined and transparent, but the narrative shows how optimistic models and internal pressure can turn it into a tool for smoothing results. Another major element involves off-balance sheet structures and special purpose entities that were used to move debt and losses away from the core financial statements. The book explains, at a high level, how these vehicles created the impression of a strong balance sheet while masking growing obligations and risk. This topic emphasizes that the scandal was not only about rule-breaking, but also about exploiting gray areas, complexity, and disclosure gaps. When results are expected to rise every quarter, accounting choices can become a way to meet targets rather than measure performance. The story demonstrates how financial statements can be shaped to support a narrative, and how investors who rely on surface metrics can be misled by numbers that look precise but rest on fragile assumptions. Thirdly, a culture that rewarded winning and punished doubt. Another important focus is Enron's internal environment and the incentives that drove behavior. The company became known for intense performance management, internal competition, and a belief that top talent could outthink risk. In this setting, employees learned that success meant delivering deals and maintaining the momentum of the company's image. The book connects cultural practices to outcomes. When promotions, compensation, and status depend on short-term metrics, people rationalize choices that keep the numbers moving in the desired direction. Doubt becomes costly because it can slow a transaction, raise uncomfortable questions, or threaten a manager's reputation. This topic also explores how leadership signals shape an organization. When executives celebrate aggressive growth and dismiss concerns, the message is that boundaries are flexible if results look good. Over time, a culture like this can create self-deception, where participants convince themselves that problems are temporary and solvable, even as risks compound. The narrative shows that corporate scandals are rarely produced by a single villain. They often arise from systems that normalize small compromises until large ones feel unavoidable. Readers are left with a practical lesson. Governance failures often begin as incentive failures and communication failures inside the company. Fourthly, gatekeepers and enablers. Analysts, auditors, banks, and the market mood. The book also highlights the broader network that allowed Enron's claims to stand for as long as they did. Analysts often echoed management's optimism, in part because complex businesses are hard to value, and in part because market incentives can reward bullishness and access. Auditors and advisors faced their own conflicts when consulting relationships and fees intersected with the duty to challenge assumptions. Investment banks and other counterparties benefited from deal flow and helped structure transactions that, while presented as sophisticated, could obscure the company's true condition. This topic explains that corporate accountability is not only an internal matter, it depends on external checks that work even when a company is fashionable and profitable. The narrative shows how herd behavior can take hold. When many respected institutions appear comfortable, individual skepticism feels unnecessary or risky. It also demonstrates how information asymmetry and complexity can weaken oversight. If even professionals struggle to interpret disclosures, the company gains room to shape perceptions. By focusing on these gatekeepers, the book broadens the lesson beyond Enron, illustrating how the financial ecosystem can amplify risk when multiple actors rely on each other's confidence rather than on independent verification. Lastly, the unraveling, liquidity crises, loss of trust, and the speed of collapse. The fall of Enron is portrayed as a rapid shift from confidence to panic, triggered when hidden weaknesses became harder to disguise. The book explains how a company can appear stable until confidence breaks, at which point liquidity pressures intensify. When counterparties, lenders, and investors begin to question a firm's numbers and governance, they demand more collateral, tighter terms, or immediate repayment. That reaction can create a downward spiral. The very act of losing trust can make a business insolvent, especially when it depends on constant financing and trading relationships. This topic emphasizes that collapse is often about credibility as much as cash. Once disclosures, restatements, or investigative attention raise doubts, management has fewer tools left, because previous assurances become evidence of unreliability. The narrative also shows how internal denial and delayed transparency worsen outcomes, leaving less time for orderly restructuring. Beyond the headline scandal, the book highlights the human and institutional consequences. Employees, retirees, and communities are caught in the blast radius, while executives, boards, and advisors face scrutiny. The story becomes a lesson in how fragile complex systems can be when they are built on perception and leverage rather than on verifiable value. In conclusion, this book is best suited for readers who want a clear, story-driven understanding of how major corporate failures happen, including business students, investors, policy watchers, and professionals in finance, accounting, or management. It is also valuable for anyone interested in ethics and decision-making under pressure because it shows how ordinary incentives can push smart people toward increasingly risky choices. The benefit is practical. Readers learn to recognize warning signs, such as overly complex disclosures, earnings that seem too smooth, leadership that treats criticism as disloyalty, and business models that depend heavily on confidence and continual deal-making. The book also encourages a healthier skepticism about market hype and authority signals, helping readers ask better questions about governance, risk, and transparency. Compared with similar corporate scandal books, its strength is the combination of investigative clarity and systems thinking. It does not reduce the story to a single trick or a single bad actor. It connects culture, accounting methods, and external gatekeepers into one coherent explanation of rise and collapse. That breadth makes it worth buying for readers who want lessons that translate beyond Enron to the next celebrated company that promises a new era. If you would like to support Bethany McLean, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.